Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Tech Guy podcast is provided by DSL Extreme. Call 866-2-GET-NET or DSL Extreme.
Hi, this is Leo, and this is the Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on Sunday, April 29th, 2007, on the premier radio networks, including XM Satellite 152. This is show 348. Enjoy. And a very good day to you, my friends. It's time to talk high tech. Our user group of the airwaves will now come to order. I need a gavel. I hit something and then something fell over in the labs. That's always scary when something falls over in here because you just don't know what it is. There's so much junk. It's just piled everywhere, every surface with gadgets and gizmos and weird stuff. And I just pounded my desk and something fell over. Oh, well, we'll find out. We'll find out what it is one of these days. That's why some of the best stuff is actually under my desk here in the Leoville Labs, the Tech Guy Labs. I'm Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Every weekend we talk about high tech here. High tech meaning not just computers. I want to underscore that. That's everything nowadays. It's computers and home theater. It's your cell phone. I haven't done a review yet of... What I think is the best cell phone on the market today until maybe the iPhone comes out, and maybe even after the iPhone comes out. Maybe today I'll do a little review of that, the Nokia N95. It ought to be the best cell phone on the market. It's $750, and the reason you pay that much is I don't think there's any cell carrier in the country that offers it yet. However, you can still get it unlocked. So if you have T-Mobile or AT&T as your cell carrier, a GSM carrier, you could, you know, with a SIM card, you can buy it unlocked for $750 and then put your card in there and it works. I'm using it with T-Mobile. But it's a 5-megapixel camera. It's got GPS with maps in it. It's got a music player that's quite good, podcast downloading capable. Video player, calendar, address book. You know, it's a PDA. It doesn't have a typewriter keyboard, although I guess there is a Bluetooth wireless keyboard you can buy to go with it. But that's crazy. Why would you carry a phone and a keyboard? What pocket would you put the keyboard in? I actually have a number of jackets that have pockets for things like that. It's a line from a company called Scott eVest. It's geek clothing. And the jackets have, you know, 40 or 50 pockets. I mean, pockets and pockets. Within pockets, they've got more pockets. And in the back of the jacket, there's a big zipper for, and it says, they put cards in each pocket so you know what to do with it. It says in the back, but this is suitable for your laptop, but you could put a keyboard in there. You'd kind of look weird. My goodness, that person has wide hips. Oh, now that's his numeric keypad. It extends the hip range. Anyway, this phone is very slick, fairly small considering what it does. I'm holding it up to the camera. I know it's radio, but there is a camera. Twit.tv/live. We do a video stream of this. It's kind of neat. On the flip side, it looks like a digital camera. And what I like about it, it's got a lens cover. If you push the button on the lens, it's got a mechanical lens cover, and it doesn't go into camera mode until you physically open that, which I kind of like. And then it really feels like a digital camera. You know, it's got the button at the top. You turn it around, you've got a nice big viewer. It's very much like a digital camera. 5 megapixels, not that great an image because they're still compressing it a lot, but because it's a phone, you can upload those quickly to the internet. And then it has but it's still not very big because the keypad. And I don't mean a Trio style typewriter keypad, but the phone keypad slides down from the bottom. extend it. And it's got very nice keys. I'm getting used to the fact that I can't type on a phone. That's fine. But as I notice, I get better and better at doing this, you know, that thing the kids do, the SMS typing. And then it also has a slider at the top that you slide out that makes it a music player with music play buttons. It's a very nice phone, given its price. Very fast, snappy. That comes with a gigabyte memory card. The Nokia N95. I have to say, I'm liking this a lot. And you can see some videos. I'm uploading videos from it to the blog. It's 640. They say 640 by 480, 30 frame a second. They use the phrase near DVD quality, which is kind of not exactly near DVD. Kind of like, you know, New York City is near New Jersey. Maybe not even that close. Maybe New York City's near Philadelphia. That kind of near. But it's, hey, it's usable. It's kind of pretty close to what you'd get from a still camera. You know, the videos those still cameras shoot. And I think a lot, for a lot of us, that's all we really want. Just the fact that it's there in your pocket. I'm taking a lot of pictures. You can go to my Flickr account, which is Leoville, flickr.flickr.com/photos/Leoville. Or if you just do a search on Flickr for N95, you'll see a lot of N95 pictures and you can see what the quality is. Look at it full size and you'll see it's blurry. It's highly compressed. But if you look at it at a kind of a web size, a screen size, it actually looks quite crisp and good. The color reproduction is pretty good. The video is pretty usable. On my blog, you can see that. So I've been playing with it. It's fun. It's a nice gadget. Scotty made it. I'm glad to see Scotty made it into space. I was a little worried. James Doohan, who played Scotty on Star Trek, you know. Captain, I can't get any more power out of her. The dilithium crystals are cracked. That one. I don't know if she can be repaired. He, of course, has passed away, I think it was more than a year ago. His ashes, a small part, a gram or two of his ashes, were launched into space yesterday, along with the ashes of Mercury astronaut Gordon Cooper and about 200 other people. Space might be generous. It's like near DVD. It's a suborbital space. The rocket is only 20 feet tall. It's a small rocket. I was a little worried. The first launch crashed into the desert, so there was some nervousness about whether this would make it, but it did. The launch went off. Commercial launch companies, UP Aerospace of Farmington, Connecticut, but they launch it from New Mexico in case it does come down. Went out at 8:56 a.m. New Mexico time yesterday. $495. So good for Scotty. I'm glad Scotty got up into space. There's something fitting about that, isn't it? I mean, it just, you know, it seems like he should be. He should be in space somewhere. Looking down on us. I don't know. What about the rest of them? I think, you know, they should all be up there.
We're going down, Captain.
That's right. I know Scotty. He's just the greatest. Interesting article in Computer World magazine about ebooks, and Mike Elgin, who I like. Mike does a great newsletter. If you want to subscribe to his newsletter, it just comes every once in a while, and it's full of fun stuff. I just love it. And he writes an article in this week's Computer World saying ebooks will never make it. Doomed to failure. Because he says no one will ever want to cuddle up with an ebook. I think this is the kind of thing you hear a lot from my generation. Because we like books. We like newspaper. You know, we like to have that newspaper. We like paper books. But I think it's also very kind of narrow-minded of our generation to assume that the next generation won't. He says, nobody will want to cuddle up with ebooks. Well, I got to tell you, Mike, I cuddled up last night with my Sony e-reader. That's how I read books. And here's the reason. Yeah, the screen is not quite as crisp as a paper book. Yeah, it's more expensive. It's $350 for the reader, and the book's only a buck or two less when you download it than if you bought it. But here's why. I travel a lot, and I can carry literally dozens of books in a little tiny device that weighs less and is smaller than a paperback. That's the point. And you know what? I don't mind cuddling up with that book. In fact, I've come to like it. We talked about it yesterday. A caller had a problem with his Sony ebook reader, and they really weren't standing by the warranty, unfortunately. Actually, no, the warranty is just very short, wasn't it? And they wouldn't fix it. Said it was his fault. Anyway, I don't. What do you think? Is it just old guys like us who don't get it? What is this MySpace? Who are these kids? Go outside, get some fresh air. Or are e-books really doomed? Is it just there certainly are many, many gadgets that have no future at all. They're just they're just somebody's good idea. A lot of times I look at a gadget and go, that's nobody's going to like that. I'm wondering about the iPhone. Is that going to take off? I look at this Nokia phone and it's got a music player in it, but am I going to listen to music on it? Probably not. It kills the battery. In fact, using a lot of these features on this thing, you have to charge it every few hours, but it works fine if you just stick with it as kind of a phone and use some of the features sparingly. There are a lot of gadgets out there that make no sense. But that's kind of what happens. It's like spaghetti. You throw it against the wall and you see what sticks. I think that's just how it is. What do you think? What do you think? I'd like to hear from you. 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number. 8888 Ask Leo. But in this case, it would be Tell Leo. Is there a gadget that you think is just ridiculous? Is there a gadget out there that you're excited about? Later in the show, I'm going to talk about Vudu, V-U-D-U, front page of the Times today. Front page of the Times business section. This could change everything in terms of TV. And it could be that this Vudu, which is a movie box you attach to your TV and is doing deals with all the movie companies, it could be that this Vudu box is the death knell for discs, for DVDs, HD DVD. Movie companies think it might be. So we'll talk about that a little later on the show. And, of course, take your calls. Veronica Belmont's coming up in about half an hour to talk about PC versus console gaming. Lots more, too. I am looking forward to a great day with you. 8888 Ask Leo. Give me a ring. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte here. I am the tech guy. We're talking about technology. I said at the beginning of the show, it's kind of like a user group on the radio. Chance for us all to get together every week. Talk about what's happening, because this stuff changes so fast. Share our experiences. What works, what doesn't work. 8888 Ask Leo is the number. The website is techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. Should be my, what did Mike B. call him? America's favorite high school sophomore, Shuby, takes the show notes and does a great job. And so everything we talk about will end up as a link in the show notes. This is show 348. There's also a chat room that you could join. A lot of fun in there. We keep it clean. We've got lots of moderation with Dan and Dustin and Shuby and Illuminati and Mike B. And if you go in there, you'll be safe from the predators on the internet. I say that so parents don't mind if their kids go in there, frankly. It's fine. And that is irc.dslextreme.com. And as I said, you can also watch live video of the show, although I can't imagine anything more dull than seeing some guy just sitting here talking, but there seems to be some demand for it thanks to the folks at ustream.tv. It's kind of an interesting idea. And the website for that is twit.tv, twit.tv/live. I'm the twit on twit.tv. Just so you know. All right, let's go to the phones. Line two is Happy Harry from Lancaster, California. Hello, Harry. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. Tell me the difference what goes where with routers and hubs and switches, because I've got all three. I get connectivity, et cetera, and so forth.
Right.
Where on the tree do they sit?
That's a great question. It's funny because nowadays, this was a question that a professional system administrator, an IT guy, would study to get his Novell certification and, you know, get paid big bucks to figure out just a few years ago in the office. And now here we are at home doing networking, which used to be considered a very advanced topic in computing. And we got to know things like hubs, routers, and switches. The router is what most people have. A router is a box that essentially shares the internet connection. So it routes the traffic. You plug your cable modem or your DS modem, L modem into the router. The router will have several connections out of it, wired connections, or it may be a Wi-Fi router. It may just have antenna. It may have wireless connections out of it. But what it does is it looks at the outbound traffic, routes it out to the internet. When the return comes back, let's say you go to a website. When the return comes back, it routes it back to your computer. It says, oh, yeah, Harry wanted that, and it sends it back to you. So that's the routing. It does another thing that's fairly important. It does something called NAT, or Network Address Translation. And essentially, that's part of the routing. And it gives you a local IP address, each computer on your network, a local IP address, and it holds the single public IP address that you get from your internet service provider. It does that using Dynamic Host Control Protocol, or DHCP. These are all acronyms you'll hear in the networking world. So essentially, the router, you plug it in, you configure it with the information your internet service provider gives you, your dedicated IP address, or it gets one from the internet service provider using the same DHCP. That becomes the public face of your home network. That's what the router is. And then it routes the stuff into local addresses, usually beginning with 192.168.something. Now, a hub is a passive device. It's just a connection device. It allows you to it's almost like the hub. In fact, it's well named. It's aptly named. It's the hub in a wagon wheel all the spokes go into. It's not doing any routing. It's not even doing any thinking. So hubs are cheaper. And you would use a hub, for instance, let's say you got a router that only has 4 output ports and you have 8 computers. Well, you'd use a hub to connect one of those 4 output ports to 4 more computers or 5 more computers, and then you'd have 8. Now, a switch is a little more sophisticated. A switch is kind of halfway between a router and a hub. A switch segments your network. It actually is smart. It has some intelligence in it. Switches don't usually do network address translation, but they do route traffic. They know what computers are on their segment, and incoming traffic will then be routed by a switch into the segment. Switches are usually used not so much in the home. They're usually used in large networks to segment the network so that it's more efficient. One of the natures of Ethernet, the protocol we're using on these networks, is it's something called collision-based. Every bit of data on an Ethernet network just goes around out to every computer, and that can really get clogged if you have a lot of computers on a single segment. So a switch is usually used in businesses when you have lots of seats to divide the segments up so that you don't have so many collisions. Does that answer your question, Harry? Is that what you needed to know?
Yeah, kind of. But see, I've got a Linksys. I have an Ethernet router.
Most routers are switches as well as routers.
My signal comes in from my modem and drops into the router.
Yep.
And I've got 3 other computers on the router.
Perfect.
But none of them see each other.
That's a different problem, and that's probably due to security software on those computers. That's a much trickier and can be something most people end up dealing with at some point or other. If you want to get file sharing to go, usually you start at the lowest level. I'll tell you what, I'll put a link in the show notes to a troubleshooting guide, but you start by pinging each computer. See, can I see them physically? Am I got a physical connection? Chances are you do. Almost always it's a firewall problem. It's security software on those local computers that's blocking that kind of traffic. That's a whole nother kettle of fish, but I'll put a troubleshooting document on the web for you. Coming up, Veronica Belmont on gaming. I'm Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy from the Tech Guy Labs in Northern California. Veronica Belmont is back, our gamer. She covers gaming for us, which is kind of fun.
Yeah, it is. Well, gaming's always fun, isn't it?
Well, if you do it a lot, like for a profession, is it still fun?
Well, I guess I can't really call myself a professional gamer, but I do get to play games to review every so often. And that does make it, I can at least justify playing games a lot.
Where we do the TV show in Vancouver,
mm-hmm.
The production company that does it is best known for its gaming shows. They do reviews on The Run and Electronic Playground. So they have two guys, full-time guys, who all day play games. It's their job. And videotape sequences for the shows.
Mm-hmm.
But in order to get to those, you know, interesting sequences, you literally have to beat the game.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm always jealous of the guys downstairs at GameSpot.
I'm sure there's games. Yeah, right.
They get to do the cool
stuff. But are you
stuff.
Jealous? Don't you think that would be actually, after about a week, the worst job in history?
I don't think so. I think this is one of those cases where I can safely say I do not think I would get sick of that. There's just so many different kinds of games. Like, how can you ever run out of cool new stuff to do?
Okay.
I'm not sick of gadgets, either.
I am. I'm kind of sick of gadgets. Yeah. Well, mostly because there's gadget clutter in my life now. I have too many gadgets. And that's
too much stuff going on.
It's like Web 2.0 clutter. I know you've got
I definitely
Web
have that.
Yeah. So it's just too much of anything. Even chocolate cake is too much. Today, we thought we'd be kind of interesting to talk about console gaming versus PC gaming. You know,
yes.
In the past, you know, sometimes people will say, well, I want to get a Mac, but there's no good games. And usually what I tell them is, well, forget it. Just get a Mac and an Xbox 360
mm-hmm.
and you're set. Do you really need a PC these days, Windows, to play games?
You know what? Well, I mean, not if you have an Intel-based Mac, because then you can just run boot camp.
But you do think that PC games are somehow better or different?
Yeah, you know, I mean, there's just a lot of options out there for PC gamers. There's definitely more options out there for PC gamers than console gamers. And I have a Mac, and so I play whatever games get ported over to the Mac when I can. But all the new stuff, you know, I really want to try the new Lord of the Rings, like massively multiplayer online game and all
Ooh,
sorts
that
of
be
really
fun.
Cool. Yeah.
And that's Windows only.
Windows only
Not
right now.
Not even a console version.
I don't think there's going to be a console version in the works. I'm not entirely sure. But then there goes the whole other side of it. Are games that are PC-based, when they're played on a console game, is it the same? Like, a lot of people will only play first-person shooters on a PC, and some people will only play first-person shooters on a console. They can't do it the other way. And it's just interesting, especially with, like, RTS games, like real-time strategy games. Like, those are almost impossible, for me at least, to play on a console, but they're perfect on a PC.
Huh. Huh. The controls are very different, aren't they, on a console?
Mm-hmm.
That's one of it. And sometimes PC gamers say, well, there's a lot more variety in PC games. Is that true?
Well, like I said, there's just way more titles. I mean, because the platform is so broad and easy to develop for.
The game could be more open-ended on a PC, I guess, is their position. That it's a better gaming experience. Any given game is going to be better on the PC.
Oh, I don't think that's true.
I think that's not true anymore. Not with the PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360. And the other side of it is getting a game to run on Windows can be a nightmare, especially Vista. I mean, I hear people have problems all the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's definitely, you know, Vista's going to need to be a pretty stable platform for playing games on, because once it does become the most widely adopted OS, which eventually it probably will be, it's going to need, they're trying to say that it's going to be a really nice platform for playing games on. So we'll have to just see. I mean, I don't know how many... if all the software companies are totally developing for Vista yet, I don't think that they are quite at this point. I mean, I'm sure for their future plans they will be.
It's true. It was true even though on XP that, you know, oh, I have to get DirectX. Oh, I have to get new video drivers, blah, da, 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 da. Whereas a console, there's only one way the Xbox 360 can be. There's no drivers.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing. You put the disc in and it works. PlayStation 3, you put the disc in and it works.
I know. There's always that fear when you buy a new game that your PC isn't going to be quite up to snuff,
yeah, exactly.
Especially if you don't have a real gaming box. And that's something I've wanted to build for a really long time.
A gaming PC.
Yes.
What would you put if you were going to build the ultimate gaming PC?
Oh, man, you're going to get too technical for me here.
It's going to get expensive, too.
It will absolutely be expensive, yeah. Well, I mean, you need a really good cooling system. You need a really great graphics card, like an NVIDIA kind
of
card.
Or maybe an SLI system. That's what people are doing now, where they put two graphics cards
in
to double the power.
You know, you need tons of RAM. I mean, a graphics card that's not integrated, because one problem with a lot of Mac laptops, at least,
right.
is that they have the integrated graphics card. The MacBook Pros do not, which make them a little bit better for gaming.
That's why I bought my MacBook Pro 17-inch, so I could play World of Warcraft.
Exactly.
I told everybody it was for Keynote and Excel.
Oh, yeah. No,
it's for World of Warcraft.
And
it's it is the best World of Warcraft machine, I have to say.
I know.
It's made for World of Warcraft. Now, that is really sick. How many, let me ask you this, how many subscriptions to online environments do you have going at the same time, and how often do you use them? Do you have a Sims online? Do you have World of Warcraft? I have three or four going.
I have World of Warcraft, which is pretty much the only thing
this is monthly.
I try to make time for,
And they charge you monthly.
That's $14.99 a month.
And then I have Sims Online.
See, I don't have Sims Online. I signed up for the free subscription that you don't really get much good stuff for.
I should have done that.
But I haven't played Sims in a really long time.
Well, I haven't either. But
Since my new computer.
I keep forgetting to cancel it. I have Vanguard Saga of Heroes.
Ooh.
And I thought
is that fun?
It's Warcraft. It's the same game.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same game. So this is from the guy who did EverQuest. And he's quite famous and everybody, it's beautiful. And, you know, if you wanted a little different kind of a world from World of Warcraft, but at least superficially, I haven't
played Heroes is supposed to be good.
Yeah.
And I haven't tried that one myself. But, yeah, I mean, let's see. I don't have, I guess you could call Second Life.
Yes, that's
cheap. It's cheaper. Free. Right.
Oh, well, I paid the $79 yearly subscription.
And what do you get for that?
I don't know. I don't want it. I finally realized that the whole point of Second Life is it's all about adult stuff. It's not everybody say, oh, Reuters is in there and they've got the Swedish embassy in there. You know what? I bet nobody gives us a Swedish embassy in Second Life.
No, I felt really sad. I went into we have a CNET building in Second Life, and it looks just like our building here on Second Street in San Francisco. And I went there. It was totally deserted. Yeah. I went inside and tried to find my cubicle. It wasn't there. It was just very depressing all around.
We had a TWIT amphitheater. I mean, a beautiful amphitheater. And it was gorgeous and big posters on the wall. And then next to it was the Gadget Warehouse. This is for my podcast network. Beautiful. The guy finally sold it because nobody came there. I published that. But what are you going to do there? Hang out?
And that's why Second Life is not fun. And you should play World of Warcraft instead.
Because at least you get to kill things.
Exactly.
All right, Veronica. See, you don't see World of Warcraft on consoles. Do you think anything? Is there any great multiplayer online game? I mean, I guess there's kind of head-to-head stuff like Gears of War.
Yeah, I'm trying. You know, I should know that. I'm trying to think what kind of
massively multiplayer game.
I mean, the Lord of the Rings stuff. Well, that's PC.
It's all PC, I think. So there's an.
I have Battle for Middle Earth too, and that's not even. I mean, there's just Second Life. I mean, not Second Life. I'm sorry. There's Xbox Live stuff that you can play with a lot of different people.
The home is basically Second Life, right?
Right.
Without the sex, which means it'll be empty.
And boring. but no, it's true. I can't really think of any massively multiplayer thing going on Xbox right now. I don't think there is anything, but I could be wrong. I don't know. I don't know everything. I try,
yes,
but
do.
I just don't.
Veronica Belmont is on Buzz Out Loud, bol.cnet.com every single day of the week talking about the latest tech news. You can also see her on CNETTV.com, which is CNET's new online television, and it's great. I love the way you do it. You know, you tune in, it starts playing, and then you can, you could choose the shows, the stuff you want to watch.
Yeah, we have really, I mean, you can make your own channels, you can surf through. We have music and movie stuff. We got movie trailers and music videos.
I'm
we have all sorts
doing.
Of good stuff on there. Tons of how-tos.
I'm really liking what you're doing. I think it's CNET's back, baby, on TV.
Oh, yeah.
On TV, except that it's on the internet. Yes. Thank you, Veronica. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you.
And I'm going to be on Buzz Out Loud with Veronica and her cohorts, Tom Merritt. I don't know if Molly will be back or not. She just had a baby. BOL.CNET.com. I'll do that on Monday. That's going to be fun. Joe, Ocean City, New Jersey. Welcome. Leo Laporte here. I am the tech guy. Hello, Joe.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm great. Welcome to the show.
Question for you.
Yes, sir.
I just moved into a new house, and I have my wireless Linksys router upstairs. Signal's not that great downstairs. I didn't know. Is there some sort of antenna or something?
Linksys makes a repeater that you can plug in kind of midway between where your router is currently and where you want to be. And it just repeats it along. This is a technique called the Wireless Distribution Center or Service, WDS. And it's very, now, is it outside that you want it to go to, or?
Well, I want to get it downstairs.
Downstairs.
It's not that great downstairs, but I wouldn't mind having it outside as well. Is there like
they make an exterior? Well, the reason I ask, they make an exterior access point also that's designed for weather. So it sits outside.
You think that would actually.
Yeah, it uses, they call, Linksys calls WDS range booster. So okay. Any of the range booster devices will work. And essentially, it's a repeater. So this is probably the one you want to look at. Now, I don't know if it's out yet. They announced it, and I'm not sure if they're selling it yet, but I'll put a link in the show notes. It's called the WAP200E. Oh, that's a catchy name. The WAP200E. Wireless G exterior access point with power over Ethernet.
That power over Ethernet, you don't need to plug that in, right?
Right. So that makes it even more intriguing.
Now, does that slow your speed down on the other side of the repeater?
No, it just becomes an extender. So what it is, it's almost like you had a little computer there that is close enough to the main access point to get that signal. You know, it's getting 3, 4, 5 bars. And then it boosts it up and broadcasts it back out, so you get 5 bars next to it. I do that actually in the house, too. I use an Airport Extreme and Airport Express routers, but same idea. It's generally better. The reason I say Linksys, because you've already got a Linksys, is generally better to stay with the brand that you're using for the main access point.
Right.
Because there'll be compatibility, fewer compatibility issues. Truth is, it's really based on the chipset. So is yours a G router?
Yes.
Yeah.
54G.
Yeah.
Probably RK, I think. 54G.
I don't know. I'm looking now at the Linksys site. It says coming soon on this exterior access point. So I don't know when it will be available. But I don't think it's too long from now. And they have a number of other devices that do exactly that. They have that range boost technology built into it. That's really what you want.
And now, where I work, we use someone's unsecure wireless.
Someone? We don't know who it is. It's just some guy.
I think, everybody has the ability to secure it. If you don't do it, you're letting people use it.
I agree with you. Maybe he wants you
Well, maybe. I hope so. Because I've been on it all day. Would that, in fact, that's how I'm watching you. would that WAP200E, would that work? Or would I need to be able to get into his
router? No, you can't. You can't do WDS with a router that you don't have access to. Because you have to tell the base unit, use WDS. Well, that would be a clever idea. More of your calls to come. I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Leo Laporte here. I am the Tech Guy, taking your calls at 888 Ask Leo. Coming up, Ron Rosberg, our gadget guru, with another great gadget. Maybe an ebook reader, who knows? I don't know. 8888 Ask Leo is a number, and that's what Jay from Rancho Cucamonga called, listening on the great KFIR mothership. Hello, Jay, how are you today?
Hello, Leo.
What can I do for you?
Well, we just purchased a 22-inch monitor for my wife's mother because she's having some difficulty with her eyesight, and she was putting her nose right up against a burned-out old 15-inch monitor. So we bought her a 22-inch Envion monitor, and it's a nice unit, but unfortunately, it keeps insisting on a native resolution of 1680 by 1050.
Right.
Which
that's what happens when you buy a big monitor. I think people often think, I'm going to get a big monitor. It'll be easier to see.
Yeah.
But what a big monitor means is the smaller dots. There's more dots. Many of these LCD monitors will not scale very well. That's why they want to stick with their native resolution.
Yeah. Yeah. She actually likes it at 600 by 800. It's awful grainy looking, but she can about see it from across the room without her glasses, which is really a revelation. But unfortunately, it's a bit on the grainy side, and the monitor has a pop-up, keeps going up every few minutes.
Right, it doesn't happen.
Hey, where's my 1680 by 1050 resolution? And it's getting kind of annoying.
Some analog monitors.
I need an inexpensive card, because she doesn't do graphics and videos. She just does word processing kind of stuff.
It's not the card, it's the monitor.
Yeah.
Some analog LCD monitors scale very well. And we'll go to 6.8 by 6 and not complain. Mm-hmm. But some will. And that's the problem, is which do and which don't. And it doesn't say on the box. It's kind of people handing around the knowledge. The other thing you can do, and you might want to try this before you give up on this monitor. There's
I'm
no
giving up on the monitor. By any
well, there's no way to you want to run it at the native resolution. It's telling you I don't work well at any other resolution.
Yeah, so I'm trying to find a video card that will work for me.
It's not the video card; it's the monitor. The video card won't change anything. That's not the problem. It's the monitor. Does that make sense to you, Jay?
No, I'm kind of lost here. I don't understand. The
monitor has a native resolution.
Uh-huh.
That's all it'll run at.
Right.
Video card, why would a video card change that?
Because different video cards allow you different resolutions.
Yeah, but the monitor doesn't like it. You can get to 800 by 600.
Okay, no. What I'm saying is I actually would like to, if we could actually find a video card that was capable of the native resolution, that's what
oh,
I'm
I see.
For.
You don't have it. It won't drive it.
Yeah,
I get it. Yeah,
her card tops out at 12. What?
I see what you're saying. Yeah, it's amount. It's the amount of the video RAM that. So you break out your calculator. What is the? Tell me again. What's the resolution it wants? 1680.
1680 by 1050.
By 1050. So you multiply 1680 by 1050. That's how many megapixels it is, which is 1,764,000 megapixels. So what that means, or actually 1.7 megapixels, what that means is you need enough video RAM to support that. Yours probably has 64 megs. You need a video card with 128 megs in it.
Okay.
Or more. And you know what? Any cheap video card will work. The next problem is when you get to that resolution, everything's going to look very small.
Yeah.
So you that now have to go into Windows and say, I want all the fonts big. I want all the icons big. And you can do that.
Yeah.
And the thing is, it's a nice LCD monitor. It's very crisp. So if you make everything bigger, it'll be very legible for her.
Yeah, that's what we're looking for.
There's also in Windows, there's an accessibility option that allows you to blow up the screen. It's a little weird. You've played with that.
I have played with it before. She hasn't quite reached that point yet, but I see her the 15-inch monitor she had was really blurry and old and with something a little.
And running this new monitor at 800 by 600 is going to look that way too, because those pixels are kind of jaggy because they're not.
It is pretty ragged. She doesn't even mind that. The fact that she can see it from several feet away without her glasses is stunning to her, but.
But it's always going to complain, unfortunately, and I misunderstood. That's some monitors will not complain and may even look good at 1024 by 768 or 8x6. Those are usually analog LCD monitors, not the digital.
Yeah, this monitor is capable of either analog or DVI input.
Oh, that's good. Well, it must be because you have an old card.
So it looks like I need to. So you're saying pretty much any card?
Any card? Yeah, it's the amount of video RAM. Any card with 128 will do it.
Okay, that sounds good.
Right, and so you can get a cheap one. And then the thing is, you go into Windows Appearance Manager and you make the fonts giant. You make the icons giant. If she uses, Firefox or Internet Explorer, you go in there and you make the fonts giant. And you can make it pretty legible. The truth is, the best way to go, people often get confused by this. They think, well, a big monitor is going to be bigger letters. And it's not. It's actually smaller. Because the big monitor is higher resolution. What you're really interested in is the DPI, the dots per inch, not the resolution of the monitor, but how many dots per inch. And you get a high DPI, everything's going to look tiny. So that's why, it's a little confusing, frankly. Often a bigger monitor will do a better job. Now, glass monitors, the old CRT monitors, had no problem scaling. And that's the other thing is people go, well, wait a minute. I was able to get 800 by 600, 1024 by 760. I was able to get every resolution on my old monitor. What happened? Well, that's because the glass monitors scaled. They weren't digital. They were analog monitors, so they scaled fine. It's the digital monitors that go kind of kooky. They want a native. They want their one-to-one pixel to dot on the screen ratio. And, there are, and I'm trying to remember, and I'll find it for you. I'm not sure if they're even on the market anymore, but we had to do this in television because we would often run these LCD screens at lower resolutions than their native resolution. And so we would look for screens that did a good job of that. And some scaled beautifully. They handled it. They didn't complain. And then others, in fact, it's often the more expensive ones, just wouldn't do it. They assume, hey, you're buying a fancy monitor, that's because you want the higher resolution, right? No. I'm buying a bigger monitor because I want bigger letters. I can't read the little teeny letters. A lot of people go out and get a laptop computer with a very high, big screen and very high resolution, and or worse, get a small screen with a very high resolution, and they're going, "What is? I can't read this." Show notes are online. We'll find some for you, Jay, and I'll put them in the show notes at techguylabs.com. The video stream is at twit.tv/live. Let's see what else. The chat room is irc.dslextreme.com. And coming up, the gadget guru, Ron Rosberg, and lots more of your calls. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. From the Tech Guy Labs in beautiful Northern California, Petaluma, California, I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. And we talk high tech every week on this station, right here. Hope you'll make it a regular habit to join us. 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, 8888 Ask Leo. And I would love to hear from you. Talking in the chat room, irc.dslextreme.com, about a story on Mac Rumors. Apparently somebody noticed, you know, and when you take a picture and you upload it to Flickr, some of the stuff that gets uploaded besides the image is something called the EXIF or EXIF data. And most cameras, most camera phones store this data in the image. It's like MP3 tags. It's just additional information on exposure. The name of the phone is in there. And some bright boy said, well, you know, we should look on Flickr and see if anybody's EXIF information includes the word iPhone. And they found a couple of images. And the EXIF data on the images sounds like it's an iPhone. Camera make, Apple. Camera model, iPhone. And looking at the image is certainly a camera phone image. Now, it's possible to edit this EXIF data. That's not a hard thing to do. But as soon as Mac Rumors posted this story today, those images were removed, which tells me they probably were real. Probably some Apple employee testing the camera phone, uploaded them to Flickr, forgot, maybe it was Steve himself, forgot that, that information would be visible. And I'm looking at the picture, and it's a pretty good picture, I have to say. Especially the picture of the guy eating toast. The image quality is good. The colors are, it looks like it's definitely a camera phone. There's a green cast to it. There's some, a lot of extra JPEG compression, but the detail's good. In fact, except for the color balance, it's actually a pretty good picture. Camera phone-ish, but pretty good picture. About what you'd expect. It looks, I'm not sure what the resolution is. But it's certainly because I don't know if these images that have been put up on the Mac Rumors site are the originals. There's two different sizes. There's one fairly small one that has it's a picture of a woman and meat. I don't, it just looks like she's standing in front of a meat locker. I don't think these are the native resolutions, I guess is what I'm saying. Not the resolution of the actual image. And so you can't tell, in Flickr, if you just download it, you have to actually go to a special page to get the actual native resolution. The image is 300x225. So that's very low resolution, but just looking at the way it looks, actually, no, that's the thumbnail. Let me see. Let me save this and get an image size. Just looking at the way it looks, I would say this is a pretty high quality camera. I'd say a 3-megapixel camera. See, we don't know these things. We're all guessing right now, right? 1600x1200 is the resolution of this image. So, yeah, that's about 3 megapixels. It's amazing. Apple's ability to get people, including me, just talking about this stuff, speculating, wondering what's going on. What are they doing? It'll be out in about 2 months, end of May. And we'll know then, unless it's held up. If anybody has an iPhone, wants to call and talk to me about it, I'll preserve your anonymity. No one will know. We can even change your voice. 8888, ask Leo. And the other rumor, and they're asking me in the chat room, is iWeb Pro, that Apple's rumored to be putting out a high-end version of its low-end iWeb application. I don't recommend iWeb, frankly. It comes with the iLife package. It's fine. I mean, it's great. It gets beautiful-looking pages very easily, very simply. But it's a dead end. There's no way to get those pages out of iWeb. And so you can't. If you grow past iWeb, what iWeb could do, you're stuck. iWeb Pro would be great if there is a way to move on to a higher-end product, maybe a Dreamweaver-style product, but I'm not going to hold my breath for that. I don't expect that to be a real revolution. 8888, Ask Leo. That's the number. Let's get back to the phones here. You know, we are heard in the San Francisco Bay Area. I know Apple employees listen. So anybody wants to call and tell us, disabuse us, Steve, you know, give us a ring. 8888, Ask Leo. William's listening in Southern California, in Fullerton. Hello, William. Welcome to The Tech Guy.
Well, thank you very much. It's people like you that help me with what I call the bamboozle filter.
And there's a lot of bamboozling around out there, isn't there?
It's there now.
Yeah.
And speaking of bamboozling,
yes, sir.
I am running the Windows Extra Problems Professional Edition.
The Windows Extra Problems?
Oh, excuse me, XP, my mistake.
Yeah, I never heard it called that. Okay.
Well, now, I have to keep my sense of humor between the Twilight Zone, the Far Side, and Dilbert.
Yes, you do.
In order to survive.
Yes, you do.
In this whole world of high tech. I'm thinking of upgrading to Vista, and I do stress the word thinking.
Okay.
I haven't made my decision yet. Frankly, I'm running most of my operation on a notebook. And I'm thinking of upgrading to a rather well-apportioned desktop so I can take advantage of one of your advertisers on using my system when I'm traveling.
Ah, good.
Along the way, I also run a op-ed website that deals with issues relating to problems faced by the West from conservative Wahhabi radical Islam, and I'm thinking of starting a live internet web broadcast.
Oh, interesting.
Now, I'm calling to ask you the following specific question.
Okay.
In order for a broadcaster to broadcast live via the internet, the computer obviously has to be able to do playback and record at the same time. You know, you might play back bumper music or maybe an MP3 of a audio interview or something, that so you can make comments. And then, of course, you got the microphone outputs. Those are being played. Well,
the
microphone.
If you want to get that fancy, usually you'd use a mixer, but which is outboard hardware. But you certainly can do it with software on the computer.
Yeah, I'm aware of that.
Yeah.
So if you disable either side, though, you kill the capability of doing a live broadcast. Now, here's my specific question.
Yeah.
I cannot tell, for all the research I've done, including surfing Microsoft's tech bulletins, I cannot tell but that Vista appears, and I stress the word appears, to be designed not to allow output, playback, and record simultaneously.
No, that's not true.
Okay, I've heard the rumor, and
I think where that comes from is Vista's copy protection.
Well, I know this has to do with enforcing digital media rights.
Yeah, and it only applies to high-definition, what they call, premier quality content applies to high definition radio, high definition TV, high definition movies. It doesn't apply to what you're doing.
Okay.
So no, Vista absolutely can do that.
Cause I haven't done it yet.
Yeah. No, Vista absolutely can do that. Now, I'm not sure I'd recommend an upgrade to Vista in this regard because, I think all this kind of software is very timing specific and, I think is not yet ready for Vista in many cases. The program I use for recording, multi-track recording, for instance, Adobe Audition, is, they say, Vista compatible, but it's not been my experience. The overhead in Vista and so forth just kills it. So I put it on Vista, and I took it off Vista and went back to XP. And I think that in these early days of Vista, this is true for a lot of specialty software like this. Vista's fine for Microsoft Office. It's fine for browsing. But a lot of software is not yet fully Vista compatible. Or maybe I should put it the other way. Vista is not yet fully compatible with this software. And sometimes it's intractable. These issues are difficult to resolve. And it's going to be particularly true of stuff that accesses the hardware, as you're talking about. Partly that's copy protection, but partly it's Vista protection. It's protecting itself against programs that access the hardware. That's what causes computer crashing. And so as XP matured and as Vista matures, more and more you're going to see that prohibitions against that kind of low-level access. And that causes compatibility issues with older software and, you know, sometimes can cause issues with reliability. So I would stick with XP, even though you call it extra problems, because, and I know what you mean. I don't think Vista is devoid of the same problems. In fact, it's going to add even more problems in terms of compatibility. If that's what you want to do, if you want to do that in software, I would say hold off. Now, I would recommend if you're going to be serious about this, getting a mixing board. That's what I use, and that's what, you know, in the long run, it's not very expensive, a few $100 for an inexpensive mixer, and it's going to save you a lot of trouble. Do it in the hardware so that you don't have to do it in the software. With a mixing board, you can have an input from a sound effects machine or tape, playback, telephone, multiple microphones, and it all gets mixed down in the mixing board and then gets sent to the computer. And the computer, all the work the computer is doing is in compressing and broadcasting out to the internet. And really, frankly, you don't want that's such a time-consuming, difficult job. That's all you want the computer to be doing. Now, it's interesting because right now we're sending a video stream of this. And I've tried it different ways. In fact, the first time I tried it, I had it on the same machine that was recording the audio, and it messed up the audio. So now I'm sitting in front of four different computers, each doing a dedicated task. In this case, one computer is dedicated to sending out the video because it consumes so much, so many computer cycles, so much bandwidth. It's just better to have it be on a dedicated separate machine. And even though audio is easier than video, I think that's somewhat true of that. More of your calls coming up. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Give me a ring, 8888 Ask Leo. Laporte here, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. 8888 Ask Leo. I saw this interesting article, front page of the Sunday Business section in the New York Times today. Voodoo, V-U-D-U, casts its spell on Hollywood. Little device looks about the size of the Apple TV. If I were Apple, I'd be actually a little nervous about it. It's got a very cool looking shark fin style remote control. It's out of Santa Clara, California, the heart of Silicon Valley. And it looks like a movie player you hook up to your TV. They already have 5,000 films in their collection. I'm not sure. You know, it doesn't say in this article exactly what the quality is, but you'd have to think if they had any hope of succeeding, it'd have to be at least DVD quality. And probably if they want to succeed going forward, it'd have to be high def, right? The idea is to compete with sites like MovieLink, Cinema Now. These are web-based download sites. Or even Netflix, which mails you DVDs. Blockbuster does it now, too. The startup created by, among others, Andy Goodman, who helped create TiVo. So that's some pretty good lineage. And here's the thing that makes this so interesting. When you select a movie to watch, it starts downloading, but apparently you can play it immediately. I don't know how they do that. Some sort of magic. It's magic. Apple TV is probably their biggest competitor. But Apple TV doesn't do that instant play. Apple TV starts downloading. And then depending on how fast your connection is, eventually you'll be able to play it back as it's downloading. I don't know how they make Vudu do it instantly. The Times seems very impressed. I haven't seen this box. I haven't played with it, but I'll tell you, we'll keep an eye on it. Sounds like a very interesting device. And here's why I give it some credence. Not merely that it shows up in the New York Times, although, well, maybe that's probably not a good reason to give it some credence, although I'm just kind of old-fashioned. I still figure, well, if the Times is writing about it, there must be something there. But here's the thing that I find interesting. Already, they've got deals with many motion picture companies, and that is telling. That is telling. If the motion picture companies like it, first of all, it means it's secure, right? You can't steal a movie, because that's all they care about. But they're desperate. They would love to find a way to end around the cable companies. The cable companies take the lion's share of profits when they show a movie. And really, so do companies like Netflix. So this is an opportunity for the movie companies basically to sell it directly to you, right? Almost directly to you. Back to the phones, 8888 Ask Leo. Trudy on the line from Long Beach. Hello, Trudy.
Hi, Leo.
How are you? Welcome to the show.
I'm fine, thank you. I have no computer.
Yeah.
I'm a dinosaur, I guess you might say. I have a cordless phone, and I was told that if I do any banking business, for security reasons, I should use the landline.
Yeah, that's kind of true, yeah.
I have a VTech cordless, and I was wondering if you're familiar with that.
I am. In fact, I have a VTech cordless myself. I'll tell you, this is too bad because, I think it's true because these cordless phones generally broadcast on well-known frequencies. It's easy to intercept. It's not encrypted. So if somebody wanted to sit there and you were saying something like your, you know, social security number or your credit card number over the phone, they could listen. Now, I know some people say, well, here's what I do. I'd say three of the digits, change the channel on the phone, then say three more, change the channel, and hope that the hacker can't keep up. It's a pretty paranoid way to live.
Yeah, I was just discussing this with a coworker, and I was saying it would be okay if I just unplugged the cordless apparatus and plugged the landline in to that same connection. And he said, oh, no, you have to unplug the AC.
You have to use a hard line. If there's any broadcasting going on, and, of course, if you've got a wireless base station, even if you're using a landline.
If I disconnect it from the telephone line itself.
Oh, yeah. If the wireless is disconnected and you're using a landline, you're fine.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, but you, the handset you're using is wired and connected to the phone line, yes?
Okay.
Yeah, then you'd be all right.
I just love listening to you, even though I don't have a computer, but you're so full of information.
It's fun. You know, because it's the interesting stuff, isn't it? I mean,
it is.
We're in this era, and we need to understand it a little bit. And I think I'm really glad you raised this, because I think a lot of people with cordless phones don't even think about it.
Well, I was listening to a pet program, and I was impressed. This little boy called in about feeding his iguana. And he was saying, they said, well, what are you feeding him? And he said, well, I'm downloading. He was referring to feeding as downloading.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
Yeah, cause he knows all the jargon.
Well, of course, it's their era. This is their, and I love watching how kids deal with this because it's very different for them. They grew up with it. It's in their life. And for us, it's something special and interesting. And I think all of us are a little awed by it, maybe a little intimidated by it, but not kids. For kids, it's like a toaster. It's like a TV. It's no big deal. Funny. My son today said, I was talking to him, said, oh, I'm not into technology. I'm not into computers at all. I said, really? He said, no, I don't like that stuff at all. He said, well, except for watching YouTube videos and I download music and email and MySpace, but I'm not into technology. And I said, well, that's a good point. And maybe from his point of view, he isn't, because he's not as, you know, he's not as geeky as some of his friends. But boy, it sure sounds like it. It's more geeky than we are, isn't he? Oh, I'm not into technology. Hey, thanks for the call. I really appreciate it, Trudy. Coming up, Ron Rosberg, the gadget guru. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy from the Tech Guy Labs in Northern California. Talking high tech, as we do every day, every weekday, weekend, whatever it is, whatever day this is. I'm a little confused, as we do every week on this station. There you go. That's the best thing to say. Ron Rosberg is here, the gadget guru. He joins us every week to talk about a new gadget, and he says his heart's not in this one. Ron, why is your heart not in this one?
Well, no. Let me explain. A lot of listeners have asked me, you know, for some advice on HD radio.
They want, okay, you know what? I'm glad you're doing it because I want to know about it too. And a lot of stations are going high def.
Well, they're trying to compete a little bit with satellite radio. Now,
actually,
HD,
I should say something. HD does not stand for high def, does it? And when it comes to radio, there's some other thing it stands for.
That's a good question. I'm not sure what it does stand for. Is that terrible?
It stands for something good. But the idea is it's supposed to sound like...
I want you to relax.
Oh, wait a minute. I'm playing it. Hold on. I went to HDradio.com and hoping to get a definition, and it's just playing, okay. It's playing HD. The idea is it's high quality, higher quality.
That's correct. So it's a little bit faster bit rate and stuff like that. So they're trying to get some CD quality like music on FM, and they're supposed to make Leo Laporte's voice sound better in AM.
Yeah,
but you can't do that. You already sound great already, Leo, right?
It means a whole new for broadcasters, a whole new transmitter, a whole new system.
Exactly.
For listeners, it means a whole new radio.
Right. And my whole point here now, I'm Sanjian, who makes some wonderful radios, and I think you've dealt with Sanjian before too.
Yep.
They sent me a couple. They sent me their tabletop, their HDR-1. And they sent me their component one, HDT-1. So if you have a component rack, you know, you could put it's black like all most components are. So you could put it in your shelf and everything else and have high-def radio there. Now, it does a standard AM and FM, but it also has what is cool a little bit. I'll talk about the HDR-1, which is a tabletop. It's got stereo speakers, and it's kind of a vintage-looking radio. And if you were going to go out and buy, let's say, a new AM-FM tabletop radio, that's what you wanted. And probably going to run $150 to $200 for a decent sounding set. This is not that much more, Leo. This is like retails, I think, for $249, and I think I found it as low as $209. So for an extra $20 or $30, high def is a good buy. Okay, now I got to tell you, I ordered a new car the other day, and the only way I can get it was to buy a Sirius radio in there for $500 and HD radio because I wanted it right away and the one was coming in.
So it's not an automatic, it's an option in cars.
Yeah, it's $595 for the high def radio, or $500 I think for the high def. Now, I don't tell people to go out and spend that kind of money because it probably costs them $30 to put high def in the radio.
Yeah, okay, exactly.
Yeah, so I tell you there, don't spend the extra money there to do it, and because of course I got an iPod adapter too for $500 or whatever. I mean, they're not making any money on the cars, but boy, are they making it on the accessories? Is what's happening.
You didn't buy the underbody rust protection, did you?
No, I didn't.
All right.
Actually, the price I paid for this, I don't think I got an underbody.
There is no undercarriage, but you've got great radio.
Right.
I got it sure sounds good in there.
Anyway, so this Sanjian HDR, it's got a little remote. Most of the stuff you're going to do is with the remote. What I do like is that if you want to find a high desk, I kind of like some jazz, and there's CSM up here in San Mateo has a really great jazz station. So I just press a button on HD, and it will seek just HD channels for you. Leo, I don't know. Is KFI HD? I assume you guys are HD now, correct?
Many of the clear channel stations, including our flagship station, KFI, I don't know if KFI is, but many of the clear channel stations are.
I know KGO up here was HD. It's down right now, and they'll probably put it back up soon.
But, well, see, that's telling. Yeah. If a station goes HD and then it falls up, something breaks and you don't get any phone calls, is there anybody listening? And
well,
that's the question.
But I found out also that there's like a delay. They have to, for HD, they have to have like a 7-second delay. So for talk radio, it makes it a little tougher for the live broadcasters out there and stuff. But anyway, so if you're looking for, a new tabletop radio. Now, what I tell my other listeners, Leo, whatever you do on HD and all devices I talk about, make sure if you find a dealer that you can get it and take it home and test it, because here's what happens. Like where I live, I'm kind of up in the hill and stuff like that. I don't get a lot of real good, without putting an outside antenna on, I don't get a lot of FM stations. Now, what happens with HD, Leo, is if it can't get it, it won't bring it in scratchy or whatever. It's going to bring it in either yes or no, which is kind of neat there. But if you're looking for a lot of stations, you know, make sure that you take the radio, have a couple weeks of a 14-day trial or a 30-day trial that you could return it if you're not satisfied.
I should explain that. That's the nature of digital. Unlike analog, and that's just analog anything, analog radio, analog TV, analog degrades, so it'll get worse and worse, you know, fuzzier and fuzzier. But digital, it either works or it doesn't.
That's exactly.
So it just stops. And you notice that with your cell phone, too. It used to be analog cell phones would degrade gently.
Exactly.
Not anymore.
So anyway, so this is, you know, again, take a look at it if you want to, you know, and read some of the reviews also, because there's good reviews and bad reviews on almost everything I talk about. But also take a look at, like, Amazon. They'll have some stuff that people love it. And some of the things that they don't like about it. The other one is that HDT-1, which retails for about $200, and you could probably buy it for like $179, $189 if you want a rack-mounted HD. Again, the price is reasonable enough. And remember, there's no charge on HD radio per month, so you're getting the service, for nothing. You're just buying the radio on it. So these are two pieces that are worth probably taking a look at and seeing if you want to put them in your home.
But your heart's not in it because you like old-fashioned radio.
First of all, I listen to talk radio a lot, and
you don't need to hear high-quality talk radio, I don't think.
No, I totally agree. To tell you the truth, Leo, I've got a $350 set of earbuds, and I also have a 99-cent set. I probably can't tell you the difference between them, and I'm a gadget guy, okay? But a lot of people can.
I can tell the difference. I think what'll happen, remember, I have to say, for a long time, I poo-pooed high-def TV.
Right.
I said, this is expensive. You're never going to get people to spend $3,000 on a television, or then it was $10,000. It's just not going to happen. And it's not that much better. And, of course, I was wrong. I mean, I was clearly wrong. And the reason is, as soon as you get used to the quality of these images, it's very hard to go back. And I think that'll happen exactly the same thing.
And the prices came down. And you'll find the other thing.
Yeah, right. I mean, we're talking about
$3,000, so you can get a 18-inch set now.
I know. Actually, $3,000, right. The Vizio 70-inch plasmas, or 60-inch plasmas,
$3,000. Well, they're down to $2,795 at Costco.
That's amazing.
You talked about it a month ago. They were at $3,000. They've come down $200. That's, almost 10%.
And I'm sure the same thing will happen with HD radio. And the other thing is, it's one of those chicken and egg things. Until stations all go HD, you're not going to run out and get an HD radio.
No, it's just something that we want our listeners to know about.
A lot of questions about it. I'm glad you brought it up. Yeah. And you like these Sanjians. I mean, the price is...
Yeah, the price is decent on the Sanjian. Sanjian has always had some good quality stuff out there. But again, check out the reviews before you buy anything.
Well, of course.
Okay.
You think I'd just listen to you?
Right.
I check. No, you know what? More and more, and I mentioned this on the air, I think, last week, I'm reading the user reviews on sites like Amazon. I think
that's what I'm talking. That's the reviews you got to read.
I think they're very useful because these are people, unlike professional reviewers like you and I, like you and me, these people are people who are buying these products with their own money and using them in the real world. And often they have insights that are very valuable. I think that's...
I do it myself, too. And even before I go on air about a product, I want to see what some of the people say.
Yes, okay? Me too. Yeah.
All right.
Thank you so much, Ron.
We'll talk to you next week.
Great to talk to you. And I hope you can hear this in crystal clear stereo sound.
Well, unfortunately, KGO people are not listening to it right now.
I know. Apparently, there's been a truck accident in San Francisco, and so that's... something's going on up there, so we've been preempted up there. But that's okay, because you're listening. That's all I really care about. Let's take another call. What do you say? Bill's on the line from La Brea, California, listening on KFI. Hello, Bill.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm not doing too bad.
I've got
a question. I just recently purchased an HP Pavilion 8020 desktop.
Okay.
And one of the reasons why I purchased it was to download and store a bunch of VHS tapes on my hard drive.
Okay.
And I've been looking around, and the more I look, the more I get confused on what's out there. Do you have any recommendations on what software that's out there that will pick up the analog feed from a VHS?
Well, it's a hardware device that you need first. Now, this laptop that you got, does it have analog in?
It's a desktop.
And, it's a desktop.
Yes, it does. It has analog in.
It does have analog in. So it presumably came with software of some kind to record the video that you record that's coming in.
Well, it came with Roxy 09 and Movie Maker, but neither one of those recognize the analog signal coming in.
Well, why would they put an analog signal on there and not give you any software to record? That's cuckoo.
I know.
Is it, what kind of a video? Is it an ATI Radeon video card?
You know,
I don't know what they put in the 8020. It's an 8020. Is that what it is?
8020. Yeah.
Yeah. Pavilion 8020. Huh. I'm looking. Oh, it's a media center.
Yeah, media center. Right.
So you have the recording capability built into Windows Media Center.
Right.
But you don't want.
I don't have any software that will recognize the analog input.
Interesting. So the media center doesn't see it.
I mean, it's
why would they not include software? That's bizarre. And so Windows Movie Maker just won't see it. Well,
Windows Movie Maker won't even see it. In fact, it won't even pick up the analog input.
Yeah. I mean, the first thing is really not software. It's a driver that will see the analog input. And there must be somewhere in that computer a way to do that, or why would they put analog plugs on the back?
Well, the Roxio 9 that comes with it will pick it up, and it will pick up the feed. I mean, I can see it in a little display.
Oh, good. All right.
But when I come to capture it, it'll just say no signal.
Interesting.
And now I can feed in a. In fact, what I've done is done a little experiment. I've got a TiVo, and I've put a recorded signal through the TiVo into that, and it picks it up fine. It'll capture it fine. And I'm using the same analog cables.
Well, that's interesting.
But it won't pick up. It won't see the VHS.
Oh, all right. Well, that problem is something called macromedia. It's copy protection on VHS tapes. So it does see analog inputs. It's just when you're getting from a VCR that you don't see it.
Well, the tapes I have are just home movies.
Oh, really?
Well, it may be
that your VCR is putting MacroVision out even on non-protected content.
Hmm.
See, this is something that once again, we thank the motion picture industry for making everything just a little bit harder because we're all thieves, right? And so they've got to treat us that way. I'm being sarcastic here, if you can't tell. MacroVision prevents recording. And if you can get an analog signal from your TiVo but not your VCR, it's because it's got MacroVision on it. There are hardware devices. Radio Shack sells one that'll disable it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's very churchy music, isn't it? Time to talk high tech. 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number. I've been attempting to get the stream back. We had a video stream going from ustream.tv, and somehow it's died on me. I'm not surprised, frankly. I mean, the idea, the notion of streaming video over the net for tens of thousands of people, it's not going to happen. It's just so much bandwidth. And to do it for free for any Tom, Dick, or Harry or Leo who comes along, I don't know what the business model is. Anyway, I'll keep trying to get that video back up. If you want to see what it is, when I get it back, I'll let you know. But we're keeping it on twit.tv/live. That's the podcast network I do, twit.tv/live. Website for the show notes is techguylabs.com. And the chat room is irc.dslextreme.com. John and Irvine, welcome. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy.
Hello.
Hey, John, how are you today?
Not too bad. I've got a question for you.
Sure.
I need a transformer or device that can transform 50 cycles into 60 cycles.
Okay. And don't they have that at Radio Shack or somewhere like that?
I've checked Radio Shack. In fact, I've done an exhaustive search on internet.
So
you are my last hope.
Help me, Obi-Wan. Well, I'm not going to help you, but maybe somebody listening will know. So a 50 hertz to 60 hertz transformer.
Right.
And what do you want to do this for?
Well, see, when I go down to Jamaica, they run on 50 hertz instead of 60. And
okay.
my wheelchair charger and my CPAP machine will not work. And
right.
I've tried both on the 50 cycles, and it cuts off after about 15, 20 seconds.
And if you put a standard transformer on it, it doesn't work?
No, not that I know of. In fact, everybody I've talked to doesn't even know what I'm talking about.
Right. And so in Jamaica, it's 50 hertz.
Yeah, 50 hertz into 60.
All right. It does. I'm looking at a website that says that a 60 hertz transformer will really run very hot if you use it in a 50 hertz country. It sounds like it'll still work.
Well, what website are you on? I'll type it in right now.
This is actually, it's not going to be helpful because they don't sell these. I'm going to look for some that will sell them. It's smeter.net, I think, something like that. 50 versus 60 hertz power transformers. I'm looking under hertz instead of cycles. And it looks like there's a lot of, they're transformer companies and so forth. Tell you what, I'm not an expert on this. So let's open it up to our audience. And I'm sure, John, if you keep listening, somebody will call in or somebody will mention it in the chat room or send me an email, leo@techguylabs.com, and I will find an answer for you. So keep listening.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you, John. I'm glad you called in. I'm glad to do that. And I really don't mind taking a call that it happens all the time. How could I mind it? I just don't know. But that's why I call, somebody calls this a user group, because it's not just me. It's all of us trying to find the answer together. So if you've got something and we can't find it, keep listening. Somebody will know. There are a lot of electrical engineers listening who are going, oh, Leo, come on, that's easy. Ben, Rochester, New York. Hello, Ben. Welcome. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. I'm going to be getting an Xbox 360 and a TV for my high school graduation.
Oh, mom and dad like you. That's a nice gift. I take it you're not planning on going to college.
Oh, yeah. Still am.
Lee, my advice to you, lock it up once school starts because you're not going to get any work done. It's too much fun.
Absolutely. My question is, I'm not really sure what TV I should ask for. It's going to be for my dorm room.
Right.
So I don't want something really big.
No, I would look at a small LCD. You do want an HDTV because that 360 really looks great on an HDTV. If it's a dorm room, so you don't have a lot of room for the cheapest solution, which would be to buy a glass tube, a CRT TV. They make very good high def CRT TVs at $5, $500, $600, and you know they're pretty big. But the problem is, they're not just big screens, they're big, they're deep because they're so, you know, huge. So I think for a dorm room, an LCD is a good choice. Alivia makes very inexpensive LCDs. You probably won't want or need anything more than, say, 17 to 20 inches. Probably 20 would be the right size for that. And I think that's going to be fine. And I'll tell you, it's going to be really look good on there. And one of the advantages of the Xbox 360, by the way, is if you hook it up to a network, and I presume the school will have a network, they all do, you can buy and download movies and TV shows. You can rent movies and buy TV shows, or even buy movies on there. So that could be your whole entertainment unit. Yeah, so I guess my suggestion is look at the Olevias, O-L-E-V-I-A. They're not the highest quality, but they're very, very aggressive price. Ron and I were talking 10 minutes ago, the Gadget Guru and I, about Vizio, V-I-Z-I-O. They're a step above, I think, Olivia, in quality and still very aggressively priced. Both of those you'll find at the big box stores, the Sam's Club and the Costco's. And I think they're great-looking TVs. The nice thing is you're putting in such a good quality signal that it doesn't need a great TV to display it. A lot of what you pay for in a high-def TV is the circuitry to up-convert to improve the quality of standard definition television. But you're putting in a good high-def signal. The cables you need come with the Xbox 360. You don't need to buy any additional cables. You'll have component in. And almost any high-def TV you can buy has component in. That's that, what are they? They're green, blue, and, I can't remember what the color cables are. Green, I think green, blue, and red, something like that. Green, blue, and purple. And you're going to have that's going to be great. But as, like I said, be careful. You'll spend more money on games than you will on any of this. But by the way, there's some Xbox 360 is a really, it's my favorite gaming platform right now. PlayStation 3 looks better, looks great, really does. But there aren't any good games out yet, or very few. There's a couple. Whereas the Xbox 360 has been out for a year, there's a lot more choices. Call of Duty 3 looks great on it. Gears of War, if you like racing games, there's a lot of good choices. Need for Speed and Just a ton of great-looking games. All right, we're going to take a break. Come back with more of your calls. Phone number is 888-ASK-LEO. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hello to you all and welcome. It's time to talk high tech. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We talk every week at this time on this station about what is, I think, the most interesting thing going on in the world today. That's the technology revolution. You can do it by phone. I know it's kind of old analog technology, but you can still use it. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-ASK-LEO. Leo, I'd love to hear from you and anything you'd like to talk about today having to do with tech. If it's got a chip in it, you know, and that could be home theater, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players. We even talk about things like transformers. We talk about things like getting your power to work in Jamaica. And I want to thank the folks in the chat room. In particular, I want to thank, I think it was it Joe? In the chat room, who came up with a very good solution for us. There is, in fact, a website, 50hertz.com, 50hz.com. They sell exactly what you want, which is a frequency converter, not a transformer, but a frequency converter that I guess you would use in conjunction with a transformer. So there you go. There you go. That was somebody wanted to know that. That's the kind of wacky stuff we talk about on the show. And that's what's fun about it, is finding solutions to any kind of issue you might have. Good news for Microsoft and Apple this week. Both made a lot of money. Well, Apple made $700 million, sold 10 million iPods. Microsoft did a little bit better. A little bit better. Based on sales of Microsoft Office 2007 and Microsoft Vista, both of which came out in this quarter. Microsoft made $4.9 billion. With a B, billion dollars in the last 3 months. 50 cents a share. Revenue was $14.5 billion. Now, some of that billion came from revenue that they saved from the previous quarter, Vista upgrade coupons. They didn't book those in the last quarter of last year, but they moved them over to the January, February, March quarter of this year. So that's why they made so, well, part of the reason they made so much money. But that's not so bad. Even without that Vista money, those upgrade coupons. We're still talking $3.7 billion in revenue. Unbelievable. Just shows you, I mean, if you really want to make money, get in the software business. Because the cost of goods is, you know, virtually nothing. It's all in R&D. It's all in the research and the writing of these programs. And then by the time you've got the program, you're just all pure profit from then on. Imagine being, I mean, that's oil company money, $4.9 billion in a quarter. Julie's on the line from La Habra. Hello, Julie. Welcome to Leo Laporte and the Tech Guy. How can I help
Hello.
You today?
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. I have to pick up speakerphone.
Well, it's working now. I hear you.
My technology battery died on my Bluetooth while I was waiting for you.
So I'm sorry. We kept you on hold so long your Bluetooth died.
It died.
Oh.
But I need some help. I'm trying to be all high tech, and I'm starting a new career, and I bought a laptop in January. Has XP on it, but it came with the free Vista upgrade, but okay. I have not loaded it, the Vista, onto it yet, because I was advised not to, because the career I'm going into, the software isn't up to par with Vista yet.
Right. Good.
So. But I will be out in the field. I'm going to be doing real estate appraisal. I'll be out in the field, need to access the internet from my laptop. So initially I got a PC card, but then changed my mind when I found out I could just do the tethered modem thing without signing a new 2-year contract.
Tethered to what?
Tethered to my cell phone.
Ah, so you're using your cell phone connection.
Correct, but I had the same problem with the PC card that I'm having with the phone, so I don't think the phone being the modem is the issue, but I want to know what to say to the guys at the store, Best Buy, when I go back to have them help me out with this, because...
Yeah, it's good to have the right language.
Well, it's like being a female going to the auto mechanic.
Yeah,
you got to know what you're talking about, or they just tell you. I took it back, like, the first week I had it, and I said, hey, my laptop freezes up when I go online, and, you know, they turned it on and played with it for 5 minutes and said, oh, well, it doesn't do it for us.
Yeah, of course. So, never does do it for them. That's always the case.
And then they send me away, and so then I...
Little lady. Yeah.
Immediately following, I broke my leg.
Oh, dear.
And so I haven't taken the laptop back to the store.
So what's happening to it when you use this stuff?
It works fine for a while. When you're looking at a page where you're not, you know, quickly switching, actively using the line, and so it sort of goes dormant while you're looking at a web page or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I go to pull up a new page, it'll sort of freeze up, and the page won't be displayed, and then it just freezes up my whole computer every time.
Oh, that's interesting. So not only do you lose the internet connection, but your computer dies.
Right. The whole computer freezes up, and I end up having to shut down with the power button and start all over. And
that's no
good.
It's
very frustrating, and I want to know what to tell them when I go to the store.
Well, tell them that story. I mean, I think that that's telling. Now, to figure out what's wrong, it's not obvious. It's not like I can say, oh, well, that's obviously you've got a broken Framets.
Well, I had somebody said, well, tell them to reload Windows.
But well, I wouldn't tell them. I wouldn't tell them how to fix it.
I need to.
Well, I mean,
tell me there's nothing wrong with it and send me home with it.
Yeah, there's clearly something wrong with it. Maybe you want to make it happen while they're standing there looking at it. The first thing you might want to try is reinstalling the dial-up networking. When you got the thing working, how did you get it to talk to your modem? Did you use or your cell phone? Did you
it
use
comes
software?
With the software?
Yeah, okay.
It comes with a software from Verizon.
Oh, so you're using a Verizon phone now instead of the PC card. But it's still Verizon and the software still works.
Right.
Almost certainly it's the Verizon software.
Yeah.
And it sounds like it's buggy.
It did it with both the PC card and with the now using the phone.
Yeah, so. You might have implicated the PC card if it just did it with the PC card, but it's doing it with both. And the one common factor is that Verizon software. That's dialer software it's using. And my suspicion is it's broken. It's buggy. So you could probably, but without taking it in, you could probably do some of this yourself just by uninstalling that software.
Mm-hmm.
Get it off your system as best you can. Really scrub it as clean as you can from any traces of that. And then reinstall it. And that may be enough to just fix it. You know, maybe there is a damaged component in there. What it sounds like to me is something we call a memory leak, where as the software runs, it starts consuming more and more memory. And eventually it crashes because the system can't handle it. To get a Windows system to hard freeze like that is very difficult. It's almost always at the driver level or hardware level. An application can't do that.
Yeah, because it's a dual-core processor and...
Well, that's neither here nor there. It's Windows.
Hardly anything on it. It's brand new.
Yeah.
So it's not like I'm using.
No,
a lot
it's
of memory
that's for... why I think it's. I'm pretty sure it's the Verizon software. So
I would uninstall the Verizon software and reinstall the same disk.
Yeah, start over with. That's
Verizon
the first.
And ask for a new disk.
Yeah, that's the first thing to try. You could go and get a new disk. In fact, I would call Verizon for support first before I'd go to a store, because I think that's what's implicated there. And the first thing to do is just maybe the damaged software is just damaged. And if that's the case, well, that's a simple enough thing. You bring it in. I mean, you uninstall it, you reinstall it. If it doesn't work, then you call Verizon and say, hey, guys, does this happen a lot? And one of the reasons you want to go to Verizon is because if there's a problem with their software, they'll know about it. They may not necessarily admit it right off the bat. But they're probably getting a lot of calls like this. It freezes after a while. That's when a program works for a while and it stops working, it's usually a memory leak. And that sounds like buggy software. In fact, another thing to do is go to the Verizon site, see if they even have an update. They may know about it. They may have fixed it. So get the latest version of their software. Don't install it from the CD. Get the latest version of their software when you reinstall. I think that's your best bet. Marta Silver Lake, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Marta.
Hey, Leo. I've got a DVD question. I'm taking a family trip to Poland in a couple weeks to visit relatives.
Great.
And I wanted to bring some DVDs as gifts, especially since one of the families I'm visiting has 2 5-year-olds.
Oh, neat.
So the first thing I needed to know was, how do I find out if our format is compatible?
It won't. So it's it's a different region code.
That's what I was afraid of.
So you need to, really what you should do, you possibly could find these discs in the States on specialty websites. But frankly, you'd be better off buying it in Poland.
Yeah, you're right. And then, well, this was would have been my second part of the question, but it can still apply here. There's a big film and cartoon company that has a lot of classic films. I don't want to name them because they piss me off so much.
Let's not give them any credit at all.
No, and they have a lot of classic cartoons from my childhood and before, and they release them on DVD every now and then.
Right.
But you can't seem to watch them without having to sit through
promos
and commercials
and
all that stuff at the top. And you can't fast forward through it.
No.
You can't skip it.
Drives me crazy.
Is there a way to get around it?
Well, yes. Here's what I would do. Here's how to get around both your problems.
The way you hacked into TiVo was brilliant.
Yes. Here's how you get around both those problems.
Yes.
You take that disc and you rip it, which means to take the video off of it, and you're only going to take the portion that is not the commercials, not the trailers, not the coming attractions, not the this, not the that, not the stop stealing this disc.
Right.
Just take the movie and put it on a computer. You can burn it then out to another disc if you want, a standard DVD that'll play just fine. That may be a little bit more of an issue because you do want to get it in the format that they're going to be able to see it in. Or you have them watch it on their...
time to do that.
Put it on the computer.
I would do that for me.
Yeah, they'll watch it on the computer.
Precisely.
Yeah, I think that's the best way. And that'll remove all that stuff. I'll tell you what, when we come back, I'll give you a couple of program recommendations for Windows and Mac to do that. And then I'll get the calls from the Motion Picture Association. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy here. 8888-ASK-LEO is my number. 8888-ASK-LEO. We talk about tech every weekend on this fine radio station. And then, of course, during the week, you can catch me on my podcast network. I like to call it a netcast network because you don't really need an iPod for it. And that's twit.tv, T-W-I-T, short for This Week in Tech, .tv. So our last caller wanted to know how to take these DVDs to Poland. And Poland is a different region from the U.S. We're region one, Poland's region two. So there's that problem. You have to buy discs that are encoded for the region. The reason that is that the motion picture companies were concerned that if they sold a DVD in the United States prior to the theatrical release in other countries, DVD sales, global sales, would kill the theatrical release. So they created these regions. And, the truth is what you're seeing is a natural consequence of these kinds of restrictions. It drives people crazy. So what do? They seek ways around it. And it's created this escalating battle where the motion picture companies now see the PC, all PCs, as piracy devices. That's why they mandated that Microsoft put copy protection into Vista to prevent you from doing these kinds of things. But it's too late. The horse has already left the barn. So she's got that first issue. It's PAL also. It's a different TV format. So it'd have to be a PAL Region 2 encoded disc. That's why I said the best thing to do would be buy it in Poland. But then to add insult to injury, and movie companies drive me crazy with this. It tends to be mostly on rental discs. When you buy a disc, usually it doesn't do this. But they force you to watch the trailers. They force you to watch the coming attractions. There's no way to skip to the movie. It drives me nuts. Drives me nuts. And one of the things they make you watch is this accusation that you're a thief. Don't download movies. It's stealing. Don't you know? So here I am. I bought a disc. I have to watch, first they're going to insult me that I'm a thief, and then I have to watch the trailers. They're stealing my time, frankly. And then I get to the movie. And I can't play it in Poland because it's a different region code. So what are they doing? They're creating people who know how to crack this. Now, if you bought the disc and you own it, I wouldn't, you know, I'm not encouraging stealing, but you own the disc. It's fairly trivial to go online and get software that will convert this disc to your hard drive. We'll take and in the process eliminate all these trailers. The program I use on Mac, but it's also available for Windows, is called Handbrake. New version of Handbrake just came out. Really great. Handbrake, handbrake.m0k.org. Or if you Google Handbrake, it'll be the first thing that'll come up. The new version, they have a version for Linux, for Windows, and for Mac. The Windows version, there is a graphical interface, but it's still a little early days yet. But if you could put up with it, it does a great job. And one of the things that happens when you stick a disc in is it says, okay, I see a bunch of different videos on here. Which one do you want? And you could say, well, I want the long one. I don't want all those little short ones at the beginning. And it will copy it to your hard drive. Now, I do that all the time because I travel and I'd love to have these movies on my hard drive. But it also will, now, with the presets on the Macintosh, you can convert it to Apple TV, to PS3, to PSP. It'll do anamorphic. It'll do surround sound. It's slick. And I think there's an Apple TV preset even on the Windows version. So it makes it very easy to take this stuff. Well, I want to put it on my Apple TV, for instance. That's how you do it. Is it illegal? Yeah, technically it is. It's absolutely. The Digital Millennium Copyright Act very specifically says reverse engineering copy protection, which is what you have to do this, because this stuff's all copy protected, is illegal. Now, there have been no court tests of this. If you read in the paper tomorrow that I am going to court, I may be the first test. I don't know. You're not supposed to talk about it. You're not supposed to tell people how to do it. And you're not supposed to do it yourself unless you don't tell anybody else. It's well-written law, don't you think? There's got to be a better way. There really does. I'm not saying people should steal movies. I'm not. And I don't believe in piracy. I buy a lot of content. In fact, if you think about it, don't we all buy more stuff than ever before? More music, more TV. What's your cable bill these days? Spend a lot of money on content. Renting movies, buying movies, downloading TV. Movie industry has a far greater share of my income than it's ever had before. And I think they need to recognize that. This is how people want it. They want the convenience of this. You know, I have a feeling if you served us better, you might make more money. What? There's a thought. Craig Costa Mesa, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Craig.
Yeah, how you doing, Leo?
I'm great. How are you?
Well, doing pretty good, thanks. Good talking to you.
Thanks for calling.
I got a question for you. I need your expertise.
Okay.
I have a Sony Digital 8 camcorder.
Yep.
And I'm looking to purchase a new one, a new camcorder. And wanted your input on... They got a mini DVD and also the hard drive?
No, go. Well, I don't recommend either. Go with tapes.
Really?
Here's the reason. The DVD's fine. Do you have a computer?
Yes.
The reason the DVD makes sense is if you don't have a computer, and so you can just pop it out and play it in a DVD player. But if you have a computer and you ever want to edit it, if you record it on the DVD, you're recording it in lower quality. There are some issues with the DVD. For instance, you can't play it until you close it, which means it's done. You can't record onto it anymore.
Same as one that we have with our TV.
Yeah, exactly.
You have to finalize it.
And I think recording on tape works fine, especially if you think you'll ever edit it on the computer. Hard drive disadvantage is you fill up the hard drive, you've got to offload it before you can continue. Whereas if you have tapes, I bring a dozen tapes to Europe with me, and I can just put a new one in. So I'm a fan of tapes, frankly. And now for some people, if you don't have a computer and your goal is to get it onto DVD right away, that makes sense. But it's lower quality. I prefer to see it recorded on the tape. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, coming up. Dick DiBartolo, the Gizwiz. You stay right here. We'll be right back. From the Tech Guy Labs in beautiful Northern California, I'm Leo Laporte. I am the Tech Guy. And then all the way across the country on the other side, on the right coast, in Manhattan, New York, New York, Mads Maddest Writer lurks. He is our Daily Gizwiz. Actually, Daily Gizwiz is the podcast. He's our weekly Gizwiz.
The weekly Gizwiz. And I have a fun gadget today.
Yes. What do you
now, did you ever have a snake light? Oh, they were out like, oh, 5 or 6 years ago.
Snake light.
They were, snake light was like a flashlight with a flexible tube so you could wrap it around your neck and aim it at a price.
Because I always am holding them in my mouth or, you know, try to tape it to my head or something.
Oh, okay.
If you're like under the in the car, right, working in the engine or something.
Well, I love snake light. And I talked about it on one of our daily podcasts, and someone wrote me and said, Dick, there's a new version LED snake light. So I called Black and Decker, who made the original one, and they said, yes, we are making an LED version. So this is it acts like the original snake light.
It's
so
kind of amazing what's happened with LEDs.
These
used to be just those little red lights that you'd have, you know, on a gadget or a gizmo, and there weren't any colors. It was red or nothing.
And also, isn't it that white LEDs were way more expensive?
Well, they didn't even have them for a long time. And then suddenly they were able to make white. Now they can make blue, green, any color. Seeing them everywhere.
As a work light, white works best.
Yes.
I mean, that's just my own.
I wouldn't want to be under the sink with a blue light.
No, I don't think so.
Attention shoppers, Leo's got a blue light special under sink number 2.
Blue light special. He's under the sink in plumbing.
Plumbing and hardware. I think you're right. I think white is necessary. And once they came out, though, and then the advantage that LEDs have is they're very low power. So they last like 10,000 hours. They last a long, long time.
Exactly. And the burn you get out of a pair of batteries, for example, this is two switches. In the flashlight mode, which is three LEDs at the end. It looks like a flashlight. That'll burn, I believe it was 64 hours with the two C batteries that come with the kit. I'm looking, 64 hours of runtime.
Wow.
Now, the side of Snake Light has a work light with 14 LEDs. And the two C batteries will run that for 5 hours of continuous use. But 14 LEDs is pretty bright. So if you're working under the car, you could twist this around the hood and let it shine down on what you're working on. It's really a neat gizmo. And there's more.
There's more? Wait a minute.
There's more. Yeah, there's more, Leo. There's more.
Well, now how much would you pay?
$500? $1,000?
It does start to sound a little bit like an infomercial. But so I kind of like it so far. So it's got a kind of a wide-angle light.
That you can shine
under the sink or wherever. And it's pretty bright. So it fills
pretty
up that.
Pretty bright. Okay. Yeah, 14 LEDs.
That's a lot.
Or the three LEDs has the flashlight.
That's a flashlight.
But if you don't need the snake-like part, you can disconnect the flexible hose.
That's in the middle of it.
In the middle. And then the battery pack locks directly onto the flashlight portion, and then you have a handheld device.
Wow, that's
neat. But the thing is, if you're using it for working, you're going to want the snake part because it acts as another person. It you just bend it until the light is shining exactly where you want it. So it's very clever. Snake light, LED, 17 LEDs, 14 in the work light.
And it's what about?
3 in the flashlight.
$30? How much is it?
It's under $30 at Home Depot. And you might find it at lower prices if you do a web search. But Home Depot carries it. It was on their website.
Thank you so much, Dick.
You're welcome.
Always a pleasure talking to you. You can catch every day another Daily Gizwiz, a gadget from Dick DiBartolo, Mads Maddest Writer, on the website, twit.tv. And Dick does a little contest on his website, gizwiz.biz, where he gives away Mad Magazines every month. You just have to guess what an unusual-looking object is.
Yeah, guess what it really is or make up something silly about it.
Yeah, and we're almost done with April because you started a new one at the beginning of the month, right?
So, beginning of the month. So if you want to see some fun backstage look at Mad Magazine, go to myspace.com and /world of Mad.
You're so hip. You have a MySpace account.
Ah,
you're so with it. Thanks, Dick. We'll talk again next week.
Okay, I'll be here.
Love that guy. Dick DeBartolo, the Gizwiz. Cassandra's on the line from Oxnard, California. Hello, Cassandra. Welcome. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo. Thank you for taking my call.
But of course, thanks for calling.
Okay, so it's kind of a couple questions more or less rolled into one because I can't afford to melt another processor.
Oh, you melted a processor.
Well, in so many words, yes. We had this Frankenstein computer. My husband and I, we're both self-produced musicians. Mm-hmm. I run a lot of Pro Tools. He runs a lot of FL Studio, which uses a lot of software-based VST, like synthesizer plugins.
Right. Used to be called Fruity Loops, but I guess they decided Fruity Loops just wasn't professional enough, so they changed it to FL Studio.
Well, yeah, it's Fruity Loops, but yeah,
I love it how they did that. No, great software. I think, yeah, that's cool. So you do your own records? Hello? Oh, we lost her. Oh, that's too bad. And I didn't really get to the question. Sounded like she was worried that she was overheating. And certainly, if you're doing that kind of stuff where you have the computer is rendering the sound, Fruity Loops is, or FL Studio allows you to generate music based on loops, built-in sounds. And then if you're using plugins, as she said, VST plugins on top of that, it's a lot of processing. It's very comparable to a video game where the computer has to generate a background, players, and do it all in real time. And it's very fast and that can get very hot. Especially now, and I'm projecting here because unfortunately I didn't hear everything she had to say, but in a studio, they frequently put these computers in soundproof boxes because you don't want a lot of generated noise. Now the good ones have air conditioning or ventilation because, well, imagine the worst thing you could do is put a computer that's working very, very hard in a sealed box. It's just going to turn it into an oven and you will in fact fry it. Now, a lot of times people are using water cooling to get improved cooling. That's less common now because the newer Intel chips are cooler. They run at lower clock speeds, get more work done more efficiently, don't generate as much heat. So one way to improve your heat conditioning is just to use newer processors. You, of course, want to make sure that you have good circulation in the case. And a number of companies make good water-cooled cases. The advantage of water cooling, by the way, for a studio is it tends to be very quiet. You don't have the noise that you get from fans. You have a compressor, but they're fairly soft. And these tend to be cooler. My favorite, Koolance, Koolance, makes cases and coolers that have very good cooling. This used to be very popular. It used to be a hot product. Back when people were overclocking their chips and trying to get more performance out of them. But I think in certain environments, like a studio environment, this might be a good choice. KOOLANCE.com. Craig Santa Clarita. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Craig.
Hello. I'm in Santa Clarita in Europe, back in my hometown there.
Are you from Petaluma?
I'm actually from Cupertino.
Cupertino.
It's still Silicon Valley.
Same area. Yeah. You bet. Cupertino, of course, is the hometown of Apple Computer.
Yes. I went to elementary school right next to Apple, and they gave us computers when I was in fourth grade and told us how to take them apart and put them back together again.
Oh, that's cool.
Pretty cool. Before everyone else was learning punch cards in college, and we were actually taking computers apart.
That's so cool.
My question, although I have now moved to Southern California and have become a film designer, so I'm stuck here.
Neat.
And I paint in Photoshop all day.
Yeah.
For my job, and sometimes have to use Windows. I'm much more of a Mac guy. I just love using the software, and it works so much better. But I run into problems with Windows, how it conflicts with Photoshop.
In which way?
Usually I'm painting and I'm picking colors at the same time.
Uh-huh.
And I tap the control key and I get windows popping down.
Oh, I hate that. Menu. Yeah, I think you want a menu. Because exactly. Alt, control, and the windows key all have menuing functions. And you'd think that Photoshop would turn that off. But
it doesn't,
and it's annoying. So there are ways to remap the keyboard using Windows XP. Sorry, say again, are you using Windows XP?
Yes, I think it's the home edition.
Okay. home edition, really, at work.
Sometimes, I mean, when I worked at DreamWorks, they couldn't figure out the problem, and we used the professional version. But I have the same problem at home.
Yeah.
Photoshop.
There are a number of programs that allow you to remap the keys. Of course, you want... See, this is tricky, because you still want the control key to work in Photoshop.
Yeah.
So you can't just turn off... the control. Now I see the problem is a little more intractable than I thought, because I was going to recommend there are a number of programs. For instance, I hate the caps lock key. So the first thing I do when I get any computer is disable the caps lock key.
Caps lock.
You could remap let's see, how could we do this? That's now you've got a good stumper. That's an interesting, because you can't disable the key. You just don't want Windows to see it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know the answer, Craig. I'm going to have to think about this. Maybe somebody in our chat room, they've been very good. They've come up with some good solutions today already.
Okay.
I'm going to have to think about it. I'm not sure how you would. So in Photoshop, if you hit the control key in Photoshop.
That's what picks the colors
right.
While you're painting.
Right.
Photoshop.
And then Windows captures it.
I'll pick a color and paint and... You know, if I hit the F key, the files menu will drop down.
Right.
Ah.
I hate that. Yeah, you're accidentally... Well, here's a couple of things. One is there's a really excellent program that is very capable, and it's free, called Auto Hotkey, that will remap your keys and will allow you to, for instance, disable the function keys. Again, you don't want to always do that. It's scriptable, though. It's a very powerful program. I would look into Auto Hotkey. You may find out that I use it all the time for things like expanding abbreviations, remapping keys. I could turn off the caps lock key with it. And it is free, so it will give you at least a way to try some stuff. And I'll ask also if there's anybody in our chat room or on the phone or via email who could help you out. But Auto Hotkey would be a good place to start. Let me think about it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Rebecca Baker coming up with a great website in just a second. Stay here. This is Leo Laporte. I am the tech guy from Beautiful Tech Guy Labs in Northern California. You know, a person who's been helping me do this show, really has been instrumental to this show for the last almost, well, it's been 3 years and some months now, is the wonderful Rebecca Baker. When you call the show, that's who you'll talk to.
No, too much. You speak too kindly of me.
You're the greatest. I couldn't do this show without you.
Oh, no, stop. Keep going.
And she's also, I didn't know this, but a pretty accomplished surfer. You've been sending me links for the show, and it's been really great. And I thought it'd be kind of fun to get you on and talk a little bit about a favorite site or two of yours.
Absolutely. I love the web. I love surfing the net. So this is what I do. And producing talk shows, of course, I'm immersed in it. So
you don't
like
just do this show.
You
do another radio show during the week, too.
A couple other shows.
You can
sure,
name names. Who else do you
sure.
work for?
I work on Stephanie Miller.
Oh, that's great.
She is
She's
nationally
great.
Syndicated.
Yep, love her.
And I also work on Handle on the Law.
And I can't say well. I can't say anything good about Bill. I mean, I can't say too many good things about Bill. I mean, no, I love Bill.
Exactly.
Bill is such a character. He's the morning man on KFI in Los Angeles, but also syndicates nationally on Handle on the Law. And he is just a character. We did a meeting the other day in the Costa Mesa, and he's just so outspoken. Wow.
Oh, absolutely.
He'll say
People
anything.
Love him.
Yeah, that's why he's
yeah.
great.
He will say anything, and that's why he makes the big bucks.
Yeah, he didn't mind. He'd say anything.
Yeah. Right.
So
right.
Tell me, what's this site?
Well, this site that I wanted to tell you about today is a site I've been going to for quite a while. And basically, if you love learning and you like knowing what's going on, this is a site that you might enjoy as well. It's called the Internet Public Library.
Oh, how neat.
Yeah, and there's a link there that's called newspapers. And you can read newspapers from around the world for free, which I adore. I love that. Say you want to know what's going on in South Africa today, you can click on the link and find out.
Is the whole newspaper on there? I mean, how is it? Is it a scan? Is it the text? How does that work?
It's the text. It's not a scan. And it'll let you know if it's in English or say...
Oh, look at this.
Say,
I'm looking at...
Say you
it's in
look
the
look
reading
Greece,
room. This
right.
is the reading room. section.
Uh-huh.
It's like a real library where they used to have that in the library. You'd go in there and they'd have newspapers on the wall. And this is all over the world, too. I mean, South Pacific. You can read a newspaper from Antarctica.
I know. I was just checking out that earlier.
That's so
I didn't
cool.
know they had any people in Antarctica.
Well, I noticed there's no recent additions, so maybe there aren't too many people.
And the other good thing is, say you don't like reading, a lot of these links come with pictures, which I love as well.
that's good. So this is would you use this as you would a regular library? Is it kind of a reference library, or how would you use this site?
Well, basically what I found is that it's the most comprehensive listing of newspapers from around the world that you can actually read.
Wow,
so
nice.
I kind of do use it as a research tool, but also for fun as well. Say we've got a topic that's real big out here in the U.S., and you want to find out, what's Great Britain say about
this
topic?
What are they thinking? Yes.
Yeah, and you can find out other people's opinions about us. So that's kind of neat, too.
Is everything on this site a link out to other sites, or is there content on the site as well?
You know, I
love that like it's all
part
links.
So much, I haven't really delved into the rest of it.
It looks like it's all links, but it's based. So what this is ultimately is kind of the ultimate collection of links to information.
You got it.
Yeah.
You got it.
University
and
of Michigan.
It's just such a joy
University
to look
of
at.
Michigan does this. That is really neat.
Mm-hmm.
IPL, the Internet Public Library. It's very easy to find. IPL.org.
Yeah, you got it.
And that's Rebecca's site of the week. Thank you, Rebecca.
You're welcome, Leo.
Now back to the phones with you. I love her. She's so good. And she got us Andrew. Actually, she's not here today. Antonia has been doing the work on the phones today. Hey, Andrew, how are you?
You know what? Andrew stepped away from the phone. This is Andrew's mom.
Oh, hi, Andrew's mom. Andrew's going to be very unhappy that he missed this.
He's going to be unhappy.
Is he coming back?
Well, he's a little indisposed.
Oh, dear. Well, I know how that can be. I have a 12-year-old. That can happen.
He's a 13-year-old.
Do you want to ask the question for Andrew?
Absolutely, because he was asking it for me. So we want to get Andrew a laptop. Mom knows very little to nothing about computers, and I want to get him something that will grow with him.
Yeah. What does he like to do? Is he into making music, videos, pictures?
He has an iPod, so he does the downloading of the music.
Yeah.
Not videos quite yet.
What would you like him to do?
His schoolwork.
His schoolwork, I know.
You know, for school and so forth. But he's a big gamer.
Gaming.
Loves the games.
Well, now, Windows is a better gaming platform, but laptops generally are not very good for gaming.
Okay.
Because they don't, in order to make them good for gaming, you'd have to really put a lot of hardware in there, and the heat and battery life would just be a problem. So, generally speaking, if he wants to game, and you don't want him to do too much gaming, especially on a laptop, because he can take that anywhere, and, you know, there's no control over it.
Uh-huh.
So my suggestion really would be, believe it or not, for him, a MacBook, about $1,000.
Okay.
They have built-in GarageBand, iMovie, iDVD. They have all the software to create stuff, iPhoto, iTunes, of course, for his iPod.
Beautiful.
And then I would, you know, you probably would want to go out and get him a good word processing program. Maybe you'd want to get a Microsoft Office. There's a student edition that's not very expensive for the Macintosh.
Okay.
And that'd be a great system. You know, my 15-year-old daughter goes to a high school where they give them MacBooks when they matriculate and for the 4 years, and they use them for all their assignments, and they're really good choices, I think. It isn't a great gaming machine, but I don't think that's such a bad thing, if you know what I mean, Ma.
And we have the one at the home. And
yeah.
He's got the Wii and all that.
Yeah,
stuff,
he's got plenty of games. This is for work, and it's a good way to focus him a little bit.
Okay, super.
Focus it on the work.
So just, that's all I need to know?
A MacBook,
The MacBook, and that there's no options that I need to know on that?
Well, make sure you get a gigabyte of RAM. That'll make it a little bit faster, and that's an optional build on that.
Okay.
And other than that, I think that's it, and I think it's a good computer for a 13-year-old.
Oh, you're so wonderful. That's what we needed to hear.
Tell Andrew to call some other time when he's not indisposed.
Well, you know what? He just got out. Do you want to say hi real quick?
Yeah, make sure he's washed his hands, however.
Oh, absolutely. Here he is.
Andrew. Andrew.
How are you?
Andrew, is a MacBook okay with you? Is a laptop, would that be okay with you?
Yeah, fine.
Yeah, I think that Mom and Dad are being very nice. You make sure you thank them, because that's going to be a great computer. I have a 12-year-old and a 15-year-old, and they both use Macs, and it's a good choice, I think, for somebody your age. Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for calling. I appreciate it. I want to thank you all for listening. But my time has come to an end. But you know what? We'll be back next weekend talking about all these tech issues. You can read the show notes about what we've talked about and links and so forth at techguylabs.com. Twit.tv is my podcast network all week long. That's what I do. That's my day job. I'm Leo Laporte. I want to thank you for joining me. Have a great week. We'll see you next time on The Tech Guy. Well, that's it for The Tech Guy. Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to hear the show live, check your local listings or visit our website, leo.am, for a list of stations where you can hear The Tech Guy radio show live on the air. You can also hear archived shows at leo.am and subscribe to our podcast there, or open your podcasting client and subscribe to the feed at leo.am/podcasts/KFI. Thanks to Howard Bailey for the music for this podcast. You can find more of Howard's work at soundclick.com. Thanks to Premier Radio Networks for syndicating the show. Most of all, thanks to you for listening. This is Leo Laporte. I'll see you next time on The Tech Guy.